policy to take funds that are intended for sidewalks, pedestrian improvements, and roll them into a proposed full street auto-oriented program. When I raised this during the last DRAC meeting, two members of DRAC agreed, and they were probably the two members that had the most understanding of what policy would be, what policy issues would be. My letter and my testimony is to oppose the use of the LTIC funds in the Neighborhood Streets Program. I support the use of the funds for pedestrian safety improvements. The amount collected from the funds are negligible in paying the costs of full street improvements and are best used for pedestrian safety and other improvements, which align most closely with 20 years of city planning to make Portland a walkable city. In addition, the allocation methodology, as I reviewed it, is flawed due to biases in the survey distribution and in the interpretation of how the strategy meets the three allocation goals of equity, effectiveness, and connectivity, and project readiness. And the overarching shortfall in this methodology is that the street improvement program really favors property owners and car owners over renters and carless households. And I think that is a big thing to think about when you look at the amount of these fees and what it could do for the pedestrian environment and how far they will go in actually improving streets in Portland to full city standards.
Very, very good. I'm going to have to ask you to wrap it up. Thank you. Good morning.
Good morning. My name is David Martin, and I chair the Sweeney Transportation Committee. And I do offer this testimony on behalf of Sweeney because of the fact the only points I intend to speak to are motions that have been passed both by the Sweeney Transportation Committee and the Sweeney Board. My involvement with LTIC goes back to 2015 when I sat in on what I believe the first meeting of the LTIC stakeholder working group. And for the past 3 years, PBOT has been repeatedly asking us, what do we want from LTIC? Well, the answer hasn't changed. We have very consistently said we want the funds to remain in the coalition area where they are generated. Southwest Portland has both the highest percentage of streets without curbs and the lowest percentage of streets with sidewalks. So on the infrastructure side, Sweeney finishes last. But on the funding side, we finished first because to date, 43% of the LTIC funds have been generated in the Sweeney Coalition District. Unfortunately, according to the current methodology, we have absolutely no assurances that those funds will remain within the coalition for the long term. So having some of the worst street infrastructure in the city while generating the most LTIC revenue to date, you can see why we put such a high value on keeping the funds within the coalition area. Personally, I have two children who are unable to walk or bike to schools because of this situation. That I find to be an equity issue. And the second answer to PBOT's question, what does Sweeney want, is we want to see the funds that are generated to be available to be used on adjacent streets. The whole point of the LTIC program was to shift funds from building sidewalks to nowhere to providing street improvements that neighborhoods wanted. And while instead, the Neighborhood Street Program is focused on primarily addressing unimproved streets. And while that is a legitimate issue, neighborhoods find it bordering on the illogical to take the limited funds that we have generated and using it on the least used streets in a neighborhood. Our neighborhoods are the ones that are feeling the impact of the ongoing development, and we need the ability to direct the revenues to where we need to direct the revenues where they'll have the greatest impact, not the least. Unfortunately, what has been designed provides no assurances that and almost seems to guarantee that the improvements will have the least impact possible. I thank you for your consideration.
Thank you, sir. Good morning.
Good morning. My name is Rich Hanna. I'm recently a developer here in Portland, a residential developer, just 2 years into this. I was surprised in October by learning that I owe about $180,000 in LTIC fees, representing almost 10% of the overall collected citywide, if I were to pursue the project that I have purchased. My issue is slightly different from what's before you today, but I think it's still relevant. I've been encouraged to testify by a couple of folks that I've been talking to in the city. Very simply, I paid for and attended an EA meeting as part of a diligence activity that I was pursuing prior to the purchase. This EA meeting happened prior to the ordinance, the LTIC ordinance, being approved. It happened on, the ordinance was in April of 13. I'm sorry, it postdated the approval. So your ordinance was approved, LTIC, in April 13 of 2016. My EA meeting was April 26 of 2016. And the notes from that EA meeting were published on May 25th of 2016. In the subsequent 18 months or so that have passed since my EA meeting and the subsequent concept development meetings that I've attended with the city, right from the start, there's been total consistency. Sidewalks are not required for this particular development in Southwest Hills, but no mention of LTIC in any of the written or oral correspondence during that time. So in October of this year, when I submitted the alternative review form, I was notified that, yes, in fact, sidewalks are not required, but you do need to pay LTIC. So my issue is really one that I'd like the city's guidance, which was really primary to the diligence that I did prior to acquiring this property, to be allowed to sort of carry the day on this particular matter. I have no issue with LTIC in general. I have no issue with paying LTIC or just paying for sidewalks if they're necessary. I have only an issue of making sure that the rules and the enforcement of those rules are communicated adequately at the time that one is doing diligence so that the overall project can be calculated properly. Thank you.
Thank you. Thanks, all three of you. Next three, please.
Are Chelsea Powers, Willie Dean, and Ken Paulson.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Please start.
Okay.
Thank you.
I'm Chelsea Powers, Brentwood Darlington Neighborhood Association Chair, and I just wanted to make sure that we were included in this project, and as I was looking at the three areas, I can see that, once again, we're left off the map. We are included in some pilot programs, which is great, but when you look at the criteria that was discussed regarding equity and need, our neighborhood was just as dark gray and just as orange as Southwest and Cully, but no little blue box. So part of that, I think, is the criteria of using transit as a factor. Our neighborhood is extremely underserved for transit, so that affects our score greatly. And I just want to highly support grading and graveling unimproved roads, because our neighborhood is home to over 5 miles of them that literally trap our neighbors in their homes in poor weather, with potholes the size of a sedan. And I am not exaggerating, because most of the pictures in that presentation came from our neighborhood. So we need to make sure that Brentwood Darlington gets on the map. And I also support keeping the funds in the neighborhood coalitions, because as you see, both Southwest Coalition and the Southeast Uplift Coalitions had the highest funds brought in from these fees. And that's where they should stay. So, thank you very much.
Thank you. I appreciate your testimony. Good morning.
Good morning. My name is Willie Dean. I own property at 4233 Northeast Ainsworth Street, which is, and I'm building a house there. And I was recently given a check sheet that said that I owed LTIC fees of $23,700. I'd gone through a land use review previously where it said that improvements weren't going to be necessary. And my basic point is that through dealing with the situation that I'm in, that there's no way to appeal the LTIC or the parallel improvements. And at my property, I'd already gone through a process with PBOT where we decided that the improvements would be sort of misguided based on the strange frontage that exists in front of the property that I own. And so I'm here to recommend that there would be an appeal process for this if a person owns a piece of property that PBOT itself has said should not or could not receive the improvements. You know, in the check sheet, you get an either pay LTIC or make the improvements. If those improvements aren't something that makes sense to do, then it doesn't seem equitable to require the person to still pay. Because if if there isn't even a hypothetical situation where the improvement could happen in front of the property, then making somebody pay for the improvement doesn't seem fair. So I think there needs to be an appeals process put into this for, you know, non-conforming pieces of property.
Thank you, sir. Appreciate it. Good morning.
Good morning. My name is Ken Paulson, and Mayor Wheeler and City Commissioners, thank you for the opportunity to speak with you. I'm requesting you reconsider or consider waiving the LTIC fee for environmentally sensitive lots where minimal disturbance and skinny streets have been encouraged. The one-size-fit-all philosophy is not appropriate for every circumstance, particularly in the case of a lightly used street such as our dead-end right-of-way, which can never extend more than 400 feet maximum. My son and daughter-in-law want to build a house on a lot we've owned for 25 years. At an early assistance meeting, they were told that they would have to pay a $90,000 fee because the 150-foot frontage to extend the substandard street, more than half of that frontage is in the environmental protection zone. In other words, we can't use the land, but the fee still applies. It's odd that the P-zone restricts use of our property, but on the other hand, the P-zone doesn't restrict the fees that are levied for that same restricted area. The city's LTIC flyer describes the LTIC fee as fair, and I'd like to talk about fairness. Granted, we need to find a way to fund road improvements, but how can it be fair to single out a person to carry an unjust portion of the burden? We're told that we must pay for someone else's street and then also pay for our own street. How is this fair? The LTIC fee provides no improvement to the street we need. The funding problem for street improvements should be shared by all, not just a select minority. Now, granted, there's a proposal to limit the 90,000 feet to 60,000, but still it's unfair. It's like being told, it's like saying we're only raping a bunch instead of a lot. Any fee requires we fund a street for someone else, and we still must pay for our own street. Currently, we are anticipating city permit fees of more than $50,000 for a house, which includes thousands of dollars in system development charges already, including the transportation SDC. The LTIC fee proposed would more than double this to over $110,000 in city fees, and there are other fees too. Since we've owned this lot, average wages have slightly more than doubled, but permit fees have already risen by a factor of more than 30-fold. How is this possible? This proposal before you will not allow an appeal. I want to emphasize the point by my previous friend here. It subverts the process, and if we were we would have no opportunity to appeal either the LTIC fee or the standard street improvements, which are impossible to meet. In other words, we're held hostage to pay the LTIC fee because it's impossible to meet.
Sir, since your time is up, Mayor, can I just ask a question?
Certainly.
First of all, on systems development charges, as you probably already know, if you moved to Hillsborough or a number of other places and built the house, you'd pay a lot more. Our systems development charges are actually lower than regional partners. The cost of the dirt is more, and that's. But thank God you own the dirt. But I'm very interested in what you said about E-zones and frontage. Now, E-zone is a zoning overlay which restricts your use of the land in order to protect it. And I can think of a lot of examples where we do that. We put easements on it. There's many instances where, through our zoning code or elsewhere, we put a restriction on the property for the broader public benefit. But your point is, if that's part of the frontage, you're being charged for that for something that you can't get full use out of, and you find that inequitable?
I do.
Well, I don't know enough about this, the answer to the question, but we'll ask staff to follow up on that.
I'd be interested. I appreciate your attention to the matter. Thank you.
Thank you all for your testimony. Next three people, please.
Are Fred Bueller, Garrett Stevenson, and David Ferris.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Why don't you start us off, sir?
I'm Fred Bueller. I own a corner lot. And so my fee, this is redundant from some of these other people, but I have 275 feet of lineal feet times 600 is 165,000. Add a building permit to that, you're 200,000 into the program before you even turn dirt. So I really agree to a certain extent with what the new proposal is. I think the way I understand it, I'm R7, so 7 times 600, I would pay approximately $40,000, so I would save $120,000. Thank you.
Thank you, sir.
Good morning. Good morning. My name is Garrett Stevenson. I'm an attorney with Schwabe, Williamson, and Wyatt. I'm here today representing Dr. David Ferris, who's going to speak briefly about his own experience with the LTIC. But I've also submitted a written testimony that you should have before you, and I'd encourage you to take a look at that. I'm going to do my best not to repeat any of the details I've got in the written testimony. But first, I want to say that we appreciate staff's willingness to suggest an LTIC cap, and we certainly support, in concept, a cap on the LTIC for a lot of the reasons you've already heard. What I want to do today is recommend that that cap be $30,000 for any single-family home, and I'm going to briefly explain why that is. In our view, the LTIC is subject to a takings analysis under the Fifth Amendment of the Constitution, and what this means is that the city has to first demonstrate that there's an essential nexus between the fee being charged and the government interest, but also that the city has made an individualized determination that the fee being charged is roughly proportional to the impact of that home on the infrastructure that it is affecting. In this case, when you're dealing with single-family homes, it would require that the fee has to be roughly proportional to the impact of a new single-family home on the street system. It's not clear to us how the LTIC in its current form satisfies either of these requirements. To the extent that the LTIC adjusts to the amount of frontage by, you know, being calculated on a per-foot lineal basis, we believe that that justification fails because there's no guarantee that the money paid will actually be used to construct a sidewalk on that frontage. All that being said, we believe that imposing a $30,000 blanket cap would go a long way to getting this program a lot closer to meeting these two requirements. And that's because each single family home in concept generates roughly the same impacts on the street system in terms of vehicles, pedestrians, bicyclists, and so on. The fact that the zoning in certain cases may be lower density does not, in our view, mean that there's going to be a reduction in trips that would justify, or an increase in trips for that matter, that would justify a higher fee. And I will note that I heard earlier staff say that the average per dwelling LID fee is about $30,000. So that's what we'd recommend. That concludes my comments. I'm happy to answer any questions
Great.
You may
and,
have.
And thank you. And for the record, we've also received your letter. Thank you for sending that. Mayor, Commissioner Fish.
And I appreciate that your memo cites to cases like Dolan, and that is raised every time someone is claiming the possibility of a taking in connection with any regulatory action we do. Do you have specific case law in Oregon that's on point?
Well, I mean, the game changer for Dolan, as you probably know.
I understand Dolan because people raise it, and the
right.
home builders and others raise it repeatedly.
So, I mean, to my knowledge, this fee has not been challenged on a takings basis, to my knowledge. You know, the case law that we cite in the letter cites a more recent case, which is Kuntz. I imagine you're familiar with it. And basically, it used to be under Dolan, look, if you're paying fees, that's not really a taking of private property. Well, Kuntz sort of changed that analysis. So, I mean, that's the primary governing case law that we were looking at. But really, our intent's not necessarily to threaten a takings action in this forum. Rather, it's just to explain why we believe that having a substantial reduction in that cap is appropriate.
Thank you.
Good morning. Thank you for hearing me. I'm David Ferris. I'm a physician in town. My wife and I own a single-family lot zoned R10 on Southwest Fairmont Boulevard. We purchased the lot in 2004 for $125,000 with the intention to build on it. The lot is right above Markham Hill Nature Park and is on extremely steep slopes, meaning that construction costs for a future home on the property will be relatively high. Under the LTIC regulations, I am obligated to either build a sidewalk or pay the fee if I want to develop the property. Our letter has the details, but with respect to your time, I'll try to be brief. The lot is so steep that there is simply no practical way for us or the city to construct a sidewalk, and to our knowledge, the city has no plans to do so. So someone wishing to build on our lot would have to pay the fee. Our LTIC fee would be $182,400, which is almost $60,000 more than we paid for the property. This would be in addition to SDC fees that would also be due for a new dwelling, which we estimate would be between $40,000 and $50,000. This means that the city fees for our house, for any house on our lot, would be in excess of $230,000. We want to sell our lot now, but not going to build on it, to someone who wants to build, but every potential buyer has walked away because of the amount of the LTIC. The LTIC has effectively rendered our property unmarketable and valueless. This is all the more troubling when it is clear that the LTIC paid on our lot would be used to construct sidewalks in other parts of the city. The LTIC needs to be reduced by orders of magnitude. At this rate, it kills any potential project on our lot, but in so doing, also prevents the city from collecting any LTIC revenue from it. As Garrett explained, the LTIC must be reduced to a rate where it has some rough proportionality to the impacts. The city's proposal for our zone would cap this at $60,000. While this is a step in the right direction, we believe that the rate should be a maximum of $30,000 for all single-family homes. Thank you.
Thank you. Appreciate you coming in. Next three, please.
Are Tim Lamers, Star Stauffer, and Paul Grove.
Good morning. Would you
Good
like
morning.
To start?
Thank you for your patience.
Thank you.
My name is Tim Lamers. I'm a property owner in Southwest Portland. I'm facing an LTIC charge in excess of $120,000.
Could you move a little closer to the mic? So
sure. Thank you.
You can pull it towards you.
I'll restate. I'm facing an LTIC fee of about $120,000 on a property that I wish to develop. This property also includes the restoration of a farmhouse on it. I'm also encouraging you to consider some rule changes that would allow appeals. I think it's unreasonable to have rules that cannot be discussed. Also, I do support the idea of some kind of cap that is relevant to the value of the property discussed. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Good morning.
Good morning, Star Stauffer. I have a few concerns about this project. One is it seems that none of these property owners are quite in understanding with how the LTIC fees are being applied to their properties, which means that there's a lack of transparency here. Not surprising, considering that according to their presentation, this really was just made public and available with, you know, through public outreach since September. We just got out in November. That's not enough time going out to these neighborhoods, the coalitions, flyers, door-to-door, whatever it takes, to really get neighbors involved in what this actually means for their properties and their streets. And I understand that you may have consulted the PDC on how some of these improvements are going to be made and how those funds are going to be allocated. However, I'm with that person that testified before that they've got potholes the size of sedans. That's the same thing with North Portland. They're at the end of the road. Some of those neighborhoods don't even have sidewalks, and there are several people with disabilities living in those neighborhoods that don't even have access to the property that they own or the street that they live on because there's no sidewalk. And yet I didn't see that on the map. So one, how are these funds, who are these collectors? That's pretty vague. Who's doing the collection? How are these fees that are being assessed to these property owners, these long-standing residents of this community, actually being assessed? Who's doing the assessment? Why is there no appeal process, and why is everybody in so much confusion about this? Why did they have a whole slide up there with all these numbers? 131 people in a focus group? And they said something about a year and then said that they made it public since September. Those two things don't add up. 131 people? There are 650,000 people that live in Portland, and you asked 131 people. That's not enough. Not enough at all. There needs to be more time for the communities to get involved with this project, because clearly a lot of this is way too in the dark.
Thank you. Good morning.
Mayors, members of council, for the record, my name is Paul Grove with the Portland Metro Home Building Association. We testified previously at the rollout of the program, and frankly, we had members that served on the advisory committee, and we were supportive of the program and its rollout. And I think as we've seen through the presentation by PBOT and conversations with others, there certainly have been some unintended consequences that were realized by the program. And I know that this has been a long-standing issue for the city. So here today, and I will be brief, to talk about a couple of quick items. First, I think the cap is an important step in the right direction, and what that looks like I think is still subject to, you know, some potential discussion and refinement as we move forward, but I know that that is something that our membership had expressed concern about, and so I think we're definitely moving in the right direction. I think the reporting requirement that's outlined in there also stresses a degree of accountability that is important for membership as well in terms of how we're using the resources and where those will ultimately be deployed. A couple of items for consideration as we move forward, and I don't want to restate other people's points, but was as noted before in the PBOT presentation around alternative street standards. I think there's some opportunity for examination and refinement in terms of the proposal and what that looks like, how it would be applied and deployed, rather than having an either-or option. The second thing is potentially looking at a cap that is associated with the property value. There have been some outlier examples, and I know Commissioner Saltzman's office has been helpful in pointing folks in the right direction, but I think we should have some consistency and certainty in that process. And then the last thing is, I think it's in the spirit of partnership. Again, we were committed partners to this in the beginning. We'll be partners moving forward. I think there's opportunity to convene folks from the original working group or DRAC to employ them and get their feedback and input on the proposal to help refine it moving forward. So thank you.
Well, I have one question, if I could, while you're here. From your point of view and from the point of view of your organization, does a reasonable cap on any single-family property resolve any of your questions or concerns about nexus or proportionality under the applicable case law?
Well, Commissioner Fish, I appreciate the question. I think a cap is an important step. As I noted, I'm not a legal expert to talk about the applicable case law here today with you. I'm happy to maybe pull some of our members, talk with them, and go from there. But at this moment,
you haven't.
In time,
but just to be fair, you have not raised a legal challenge to the LTIC under either proportionality or nexus. And you have been at the table working out the details. So can we assume that you're satisfied that with reasonable cap and other protections, this is otherwise constitutional?
I am not in a position to speak to the constitutionality of an issue, but we did not raise that issue during the work of the work group.
And are you planning to raise it at some future time?
It has not been discussed amongst our membership.
Thank you.
Thank you all. Thanks to all three of you. Appreciate it. Next three, please.
The last two who signed up are Rick Bartsko and Laura Young.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Thanks for coming in.
Mayor Wheeler, commissioners, my name's Rick Bartsko. I live in Mill Park neighborhood. I'm here representing myself as a citizen, but more importantly, Division Midway Alliance, which is basically centered on the Boulevard Division in the neighborhood of 112 to 148. So we have a vested interest in getting some clarity on the proposals that PBOT has made about our neighborhood. Division Midway Alliance is a neighborhood prosperity initiative, and we are the people that will be advocating for equity, hopefully most aggressively in this session. We had a neighborhood street plan put together by PBOT with the expert help of April Bertelson a couple of years ago, called the Vision Midway Neighborhood Street Plan. And I would just ask for clarity on which portions of that street plan. I couldn't see the specific map that was shown. Hadn't seen it before, but if we get some clarity from PBOT as to, you know, what areas, what geographic areas of East Portland are involved within the context of the street plan. I have a specific example of developments going on right next to me. One property being developed, one property potentially to be developed. Those two properties in aggregate, one single family residential, smaller lot, and a larger lot, are going to be about $150,000 under the existing LTIC. So I would like some clarity also with PBOT on what issues may happen on that street segment. And I would just ask for basically collaboration between PBOT, BES, BPS, and all the folks involved to make sure that the things we talked about, coordinating projects, goes on in a timely and effective fashion. That's all I have.
Very good. Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Good morning.
Good morning. So it's a little serendipitous that this gentleman and I sat down together. I'm from Cully. I'm Laura Young. I am the Cully Association of Neighbors Chair. I'm also the district manager of the Cully Boulevard Alliance, which is a neighborhood prosperity initiative. We also in Cully have a neighborhood streets plan that was put together by Debbie Bischoff. It's the Cully Main Street Local Street Improvements Plan. And we, back in 2012, participated in the Out of the Mud and Dust initiative and enthusiastically supported that. Unfortunately, since 2012, not a single alternative street has been built in Cully. There's a number of issues. I'm actually really pleased to hear, after hearing all this testimony, that this will be coming back in January to give more time for folks to iron out some of the details. So just briefly, you have my comments there, but I'm very much in favor of a cap and an appeals process for folks so that all of these property owners that are here today are really able to stand behind this program and feel that it's equitable and not feel that it's being creating a burden to them to the extent that they're not able to even develop a property. The three neighborhoods that were identified in this plan all have street improvement, local street improvement plans in place, and that's why they were identified. It's not to say that there aren't other neighborhoods just as much in need, particularly Brentwood, Darlington. I would say, however, that of the annexed neighborhoods that have dirt and gravel roads that have been annexed since 1985, not a single one has received a funded street improvement or graveling or regrading or maintenance of a gravel road in those 32 years. And I can personally tell you that there are 35-foot trees in the middle of 70th Avenue, two blocks from my home. So there needs to be some sort of systematic and equitable method of addressing these issues. And grading and graveling of all of the neighborhood streets seems to be a step in the right direction.
Laura, can I just pose a question since sure. We're going to have more time to think about this? The mayor, I think, put a provocative question on the table, and you're uniquely qualified to think about it and give us some feedback, which is, if in this process Cully was one of the communities singled out and prioritized, mm-hmm. but the city came back and said, if we delay a year or two, we can go deeper and bigger by bringing utilities and others to bear and mm-hmm. therefore attempt to minimize the cumulative impact of all this work. Mm-hmm. Is that trade-off worth slightly delaying the work? And I'm not expecting you to give an answer now, but I think it's a provocative question we need to ask mm-hmm. Because it is very disruptive when we go into these communities and do this work. And if we coordinated it differently and gave you the promise of a bigger impact, would you be willing to trade off a little delay for that? And is that a fair trade-off?
Well, I think that is a pretty provocative question. My personal opinion is that we want to create the greatest amount of efficiency possible, get the most bang for our buck. But I would defer to my neighborhood and invite you all to come and talk about it with them.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Well, thank you. So that completes the testimony. As I said a few minutes ago, we will take everything under advisement and come back either in January or February for hopefully a revised proposal that addresses many of the concerns that have been raised today. Thank you all.
Very good. Thanks, Commissioner Saltzman. Thank you to everybody who testified today. Next, item 1283.